This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, and thank you for staying with us on The Morning Run. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll speak to Dr. Hamidin of the Ilam Centre on the revelation from Tajuddin's Tell All Preza. But in the meantime, we now shift our attention to women's involvement in the workforce and their decision to delay marriage or even remain single.
So according to the Department of Statistics Malaysia, the mean age of a woman's first marriage has increased from 23 and a half years in 1980 to 28.1 years in 2020. The data also showed that women are having children at a later age. In 1990, 25.6 years was the average age a woman gave birth for the first time, and 30 years later, that figure has increased to 28 years. So in these changing times, how should women who are opting to marry later or remain single be supported and not discriminated against?
Yep, the question is, are we headed in the right direction by improving gender equality of the country? So for some answers to these questions and other burning ones, we now turn to Anis Farid, the Research and Advocacy Officer of the Women's Aid Organisation. Anis, what do you make of this increase in age for the first marriage by around 5 years? What factors have contributed to the shift?
Thank you for having me here today, first of all. Okay, so to answer your question, potentially this might have to do with social norms shifting and women getting married later being more socially acceptable. Women may also have more autonomy over these decisions now compared to previously. This could also coincide with increasing access to education as well, because, for example, in Malaysia, we can see that women are nearly 60% of those enrolled in tertiary education.
I'm just curious, should we look at these shifts as in a positive or negative light, actually?
That's a good question. Okay, so when we talk about these shifts, right, and potentially what they represent on women's views towards marriage and equality, maybe women are delaying marriage because they want to be more financially stable for marriage, especially with how high costs of living are nowadays. Maybe they want to grow their career and have contingency savings just in case. Maybe they feel like they have an equal responsibility to contribute to family finances now compared to previously as well. Overall, though, I'd say that these are good signs for women's thinking around equality and their equal roles and responsibilities potentially in marriage. But again, equality is not achieved through just what half the population decides to do, right? It's also important to note that while we have this data, and it is data for the overall population, it's only disaggregated by age. So there could be some meaningful differences between women of different socioeconomic status or other markers that we aren't seeing with the numbers that we do have. And unfortunately, also with what we do know, we aren't seeing these gains of delayed marriage translated into the workforce if women do decide to get married. So meaning after they complete their tertiary education, there's a leakage of women out of the labor force that persists throughout their lifetime. And this coincides with the age that women start getting married, settling down and having kids. So marriage age has increased to 28 years old for women. But what we see is that there's less women in their 30s in the workforce and even less in their 40s and so on compared to women in their 20s if they decide to get married. And it's also important to emphasize that women leaving the workforce because of family responsibilities is not a decision they make because their priorities have shifted from work to family. It's a decision made under the pressure of circumstances where we lack family-friendly policies. Things such as extended parental leave, especially paternity leave, access to affordable childcare, breastfeeding policies in companies, whether or not there are pumping rooms, things like that. All of these policies will decide whether or not a woman can feel she can comfortably return to work after having kids. So overall, while there may be subtle gains in equality, women may lose out in the long run if they decide to get married. In the absence of family-friendly policies, and this, of course, would carry an economic cost as well.
So if economics is the objective interpretation of this data, Anis, I guess what happens is that if there is this parity being achieved, then the working age population of Malaysians will deteriorate over time. So which mandate is more important here, equality or working age population? Because as we know, only one half of the gender pool is capable of producing the next generation.
I don't think it should be thought of as one or the other. Again, as I mentioned before, family-friendly policies can help really encourage women to feel like they can return back to work after having kids, starting a family, things like that. So long as women are supported in their careers, there is a way to get them to return to the workforce.
So, Anis, what can we then do to support women to come back into the workforce? I mean, we are going to see some changes to Malaysia's Employment Act, including the provision of maternity and paternity leave and even the application for flexible work arrangements. But is that enough?
So with the Employment Act amendments, these definitely demonstrate progress, and that's definitely encouraging and welcomed. As you mentioned, maternity leave has been extended from 60 days to 98 days, which now meets the International Labour Organization standards. We've also introduced a 7-day paternity leave for the private sector. And women are also protected from termination during pregnancy and so on forth. However, there are still a few gaps within the Employment Act amendments. So, for example, the new introductions such as protecting from pregnancy discrimination doesn't extend to job seekers. So it is still perfectly acceptable for employers to ask women during job interviews if they are pregnant and then decide not to give them the job because they are. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, WAO had been campaigning previously for the inclusion of a prohibition on discrimination on the basis of gender, age, disability status, marital status, race, religion, or other reasons along similar lines to be included in the Employment Act amendments that were recently tabled. And these were unfortunately not included in the Employment Act amendments. However, the Labor Department Director General can now investigate disputes on discrimination, though there is no discrimination on the in the Employment Act as to what discrimination entails. So employees can have disputes of discrimination investigated, but they're working under a circumstance where the Employment Act does not define what discrimination is. So ideally, I mean, it'd be great if the Employment Act could explicitly define and prohibit discrimination on the basis of these grounds, just to have policies that would protect not just women, but really anyone else out there from facing employment discrimination on these issues.
Yeah, and it's notwithstanding the good work that you are doing at the WAO and, of course, legislation as well, there are cultural sensitivities within Malaysia at a country-specific level that, go against or militate against singlehood. Now, how does Malaysia overcome those cultural blockages?
So I think it goes back to social norms, right? And finding simple ways to sort of challenge them where we see them most prevalent. So with deciding to remain single, it can just be simple things like asking, why do you think women need to be married? Or why do you think, or how do you view the traditional role of women? And why do you think that it is a bad thing for women to not be married? All of these little things, just opening up conversations where you can have them to slowly shift minds. This is obviously not as easy as it sounds because it can get very emotional and tense sometimes having these conversations, and it can feel like emotional labor. But these are small steps that we can take towards shifting the mindset of people within society that might see singlehood, especially for women, as a huge issue.
Okay, I want to continue this conversation with regards to the flexible work arrangements, which are supposed to come into will come into law very soon. Do you think this will then help a lot of women who have actually opted out of their careers to go back into the workforce? And do we know the details of the act, whether employers will actually be open to these working arrangements?
This is a really important question. So the hope with a flexible work arrangement is that more women will participate in the formal labor force, as you mentioned. So currently in Malaysia, only around 55% of working aged women are participating in the formal labor force. And this is one of the lowest figures in the ASEAN region. And a lot of women who have left the formal labor force, they cite family responsibilities as the main reason for why they're not in the workforce. And trends prior to the pandemic has shown that women in Malaysia were more likely to choose precarious informal jobs over stable jobs for their flexible hours. So while the amendment does say that employees can apply for flexible work arrangements, employers are only required to respond with a yes or no. And if no, they have to give reasons why. It doesn't say that because an employee applies for flexible work, the request has to be approved. Mm. So for this, I think it really depends on how employers choose to respond. The pandemic has shown that work from home does work, but as we shift towards endemicity, there's also an increased pressure to return to in-person work. It's also important that if work from home and flexible work are available, that employees aren't made to feel bad for choosing those options and are supported in making those decisions. Not all employees will have the same needs, and flexible work allows us to meet those different needs. So I guess ideally, we'd like to see flexible work empower more women to return to the workforce. But alongside this, we need more empathy and understanding from employers. Ideally, also, it'd be nice to see it's not just women taking advantage of the flexible work, but fathers too, who work alongside their partners as a team to raise their kids. And this can help normalize involved fatherhood and also support women returning to work.
Absolutely well said. Thank you so much for your time. That was Anis Farid, Research and Advocacy Officer for the Women's Aid Organisation. So much to unpack there, and such a complex issue. But the fact remains, according to Anis, only 55% of women are in the active labour force. So that's not a lot.
Well, I think the reality is that very often the duties of the household, looking after children and even looking after the elderly, fall into the hands of women, right? Even though there have been steps towards more gender equality, but clearly not enough. And I wonder whether that conversation needs to be had right at the beginning at schools, in homes where women are empowered, and it's not just a patriarchal society.
Yep, it's a collective responsibility. 7:29 in the morning, we'll come back after this with Bun Nagara, and we'll discuss the G7 summit. It's happening after the news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.